It is time for Cal's Wine Chat with wine expert Cal Lee. Up until the 1960s, muscats were fortified wines were the backbone of the Australian wine industry. In modern times, muscat is rarely seen on labels of wines around Australia. In spite of this, the Wine Australia 2025 vintage report states Muscat Gordo Blanc is Australia's fifth most harvested white grape, and its uncle, Muscat Appetit Grands, is also in the top 10. So what role does the Muscat family of grapes play in the Australian wine industry? Who's drinking these Muscat wines? To discuss all this and more, we're joined by Cal Lee. Cal, thank you so much for joining me this morning. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for asking.
Oh, no worries. Anyway, that's it. Thanks for coming on. We'll see you next week. So what makes the Muscat family unique?
Yeah, so and we sort of chatted about this a little bit when we did the Sauvignon episode a few months back. The Muscat family of grapes, and specifically Muscat Petit Grand, is sort of considered to be the oldest genetically stable grape variety that we have. We've got pretty comprehensive records of it being first planted in France and Italy during the sort of Norman era, but we've got like sort of vague records of it somewhere around 300 to 400 AD. So it's very old. We know that. There's also somewhere between 70 to 200 varieties of Muscat. And the reason there's so much variation in those numbers is that as it sort of traveled all over Europe and then extended outside of Europe, every country sort of started to create its own colloquial names for it. And so you end up with these really complex, weird little things where, in one of the main reference books I use, there's just an entire page of just Muscat names and the grapes that they probably actually relate to, but maybe not because I don't speak Croatian. So like, who can prove it, And so, they're a very historically important grape. They're spread really widely all across Europe. And then we see an export out of sort of Portugal, where they get used a lot in fortified wines. And then they make themselves to the New World, specifically to South Africa and then Australia, where, as we sort of mentioned at the top of the show, fortified wines were basically the backbone and the main kind of style of wine that was being made in Australia up until the 1960s, and you sort of get all sorts of different muskets being used out. You get white muskets, you get brown muskets, you get red muskets, and rah, rah, rah. But they're sort of really important grapes, that kind of thing. And the other benefit of muscat as a grape family is that they're one of the few grapes that are both table grapes and wine grapes. So I don't know how many people know this, but, when you go and buy a bag of grapes at the shop, you're not usually buying a bag of, like, Shiraz or a bag of Chardonnay. It'll be something like Sultana, for example, which is really, really widely planted all over Australia, or like Flaming Seedless, I think is the most popular table grape at the moment, which is just, your classic big green seedless grapes, you know what I mean? And because it's Muscat's ability to do both, it has sort of endured in popularity all over the world and sort of has a lot of purposes as just sort of a very sweet. It's got the quintessential, like, grapey flavors, which we think of. It's like the default taste of grape is that's what Muscat tastes like. They're sort of really widely planted and sort of exist in all weird and wonderful forms all across the world.
Yeah, and so if Muscat got in the top five grapes and it's such a sort of, for lack of a better term, generic grape taste, where is it all going if we're not drinking it?
Yeah, well, and this is the thing. We actually are drinking it.
What?
But I know. It's been inside us all along, Cameron.
The grape was coming from inside my body the whole time?
Yeah. That's why you don't swallow grape seeds. A little, it's like water. Yeah.
Every now and again, I get like a cough up, but like a vine. Or like a little...
Yeah.
It's like, what is this? Anyway.
Yeah. And that's your part in the viticultural process.
I'm right amongst it. I'm really in the weeds in this one.
In the weeds. But no, so sort of part of the reason why I wanted to sort of talk about how many names and how many different subtypes and various things are is that there are sort of a lot of pseudonyms for Muscat. sort of the last time Muscat was really popular was sort of in the early 2000s when we had our big sort of Moscato phase. Moscato is the Italianization of the word Muscat. And, you know, like Brown Brothers built an entire wine empire basically on making really sweet, slightly fizzy Moscatos styled after the Mike Moscato d'Asti. But these, like, given how long it takes to sort of have these viticultural shifts, these grapes sort of haven't really gone anywhere. But they do end up getting blended a lot into like bulk box wines. So, you know, Muscat Gordo, also known as like, there's a few other Muscats that are also known as like Lexi or Lexia. If anyone's a big box wine enthusiast, you might recognize Fruity Gordo and Fruity Lexia as like, you know, two kingpins of at least my over 18 teenage years.
Are you a big box wine enthusiast, Carl?
I definitely was at one point, yeah.
That's where it all started. That's where it all started. It's like, exactly, oh, this box wine is not quite up to scratch yet.
And this is the thing, like, there was genuine chats in my friend group at the time about the superiority of Fruity Gordo versus Fruity Lexia, you know?
Was where it all started, huh? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it really was.
You had a discerning nose for box wine.
Yeah, that's it. But a lot of it gets blended into generic, like, sort of table whites or, you know, your house white wine options or your box white wine options. But then when the sort of natural wine scene started to kick off, you get a lot of guys who are, let's face it, not super cashed up, and they're looking for quite cheap grapes to purchase. And then you find this grape varietal that's planted absolutely all over Australia, and it's selling for pretty cheap because it doesn't have a particularly reputable name and people don't really think about making anything that's not box wine or sweet wine out of it. And that's when you see the shift of like, you know, Muscat of Alexandria and stuff like that. But you start to see the term Zabibbo pop up, which is sort of like a Mediterranean term for these wines. And then people start making them into these like skinsy orange wines that are like super duper floral, but like bone dry and really textured. And then it sort of starts to see this little bit of a renaissance as a really common building block in a lot of these orange natural wines because, you know, it's affordable, it's planted everywhere, and, you know, it's really, really pronounced in its flavor profiles, which, especially at the emergence of sort of the natural wine scene in Australia, big, bold, super pronounced flavors were really, really important to sort of the way that these wines are made to appeal to a demographic that hadn't ever really interacted with the wine scene before. So sort of between those, the three market segments, and then obviously still, you know, the historical fortified movement that still is using Muscat and has done for, I think it's like 180 years or something like that, and we'll cover that later. But, you know, between all those sort of market segments, it all gets carved up and used in quite a wide variety of wine styles, most of whom try to not let you sort of think about what it's actually made from.
Right. And so those are the reasons why it's so widely planted in Australia. It's cheap and it's quite prolific in not its own specific, you know, label, but, you know, there's a little bit of it in everywhere, right? So is there any other reason why it's so widely planted, or is that's kind of it?
Part of it is that, you know, it came along with the original, like, South African plantings, which was sort of the first colonization of grapes on this country was all from that material. But, you know, it's got good hardiness. It yields quite well. It's considered a noble grape variety for whatever you need that to mean. But also, you know, it keeps a good amount of sugar in hot climates and, you know, has somewhat a decent amount of drought tolerance for when it needs it, which in a country like Australia, where it's sort of dry and quite hot, you know, it works well in sort of like hot agricultural regions, which is why I think it's sort of been used for so long in this country.
And just quickly, what regions are specializing in Muscat these days?
Yeah, so you've got Rutherglen is, I think, the home of sort of what we consider the classic traditional style of Muscat. They use Muscat et Petit Grand Rouge, which for eagle-eared listeners is basically the red version of Muscat. And they make it as a really classic fortified. They make some incredible wines out of Rutherglen. But with the current palate trending away from sweet wines and higher alcohol wines as the purveyor of one of the finest sweet fortified wines in Australia, they've sort of been struggling a lot with these change in market conditions. But if you ever can see If you ever find any of these wines, they're really, really spectacular things to drink.
And so what are you drinking this week?
Yeah, I actually don't have a musket for this one, which I feel kind of guilty about. I'm gonna talk about something else.
All this talk about musking, you can't even recommend. I guess what you mentioned previously, but yeah, what are you drinking? Sorry, I shouldn't rag on you too much, Cal. My goodness.
I'm drinking La Douche Tropicale by our friends Compinamaru. It's not anything weird. It's just tropical showers in French. Get your mind out of the gutter. But no, this is a pretty feisty, like, skin contact orange wine. It's full of that sort of like tropical flavors. I actually think it does have a 10% blend in of Sativa from memory. I need to double check that.
Hey.
But it's prolific in that way. But we've got an event coming up at High Bar with the guys from Compinamaru. We're doing the drop with them on Wednesday. And then if there's any people interested in doing the urban wine walk, we'll have the guys from Compinamaru pouring some of their wines on the following Saturday. That's my recommendation for this week.
It's all going on at Hive Bar. All the wines happen.
Sure, always is, mate, you know.
Good stuff. Right. Well, thank you so much again, Cal, for finding time in day to having a chat with us. All the best with all the things going on with you, all the events and all that. And talk to you next week.
I'll see you next week.
Do you know what we're doing yet, or it's going to be a surprise for both of us?
I think it's going to be a surprise for both of us.
Wonderful.
It might just be about refrigeration techniques.
Hey, perfect.
That's mainly what I'm looking at.
Yeah, whack it in the fridge. That's all you need to do.
Yeah, that's it. That's it, you know.
Brilliant. All right, Cal. Have a good week. I'll see you next week.
You take care, Cam.